It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent rodhunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Permeating our news is the slow death of America. Oh, sure, there are a lot of things to be happy about. At the moment, we do have a reprieve under Donald Trump, and polls show more people turning conservative, abandoning the lunacy of the left. Yes, that is certainly good news. In fact, that's great news for those concerned about socialist, communist dictatorships in our horizon, courtesy of the Democrats. Unfortunately, even though the left and the right have little in common with ideologies, there is a cancer growing on both sides of the aisle, and this cancer is anti-Semitism. It's even getting into the church, conservative churches, in the name of replacement theology. Christians who once accepted biblical prophecy about Israel are now instead accepting the idea that God is not working with Israel anymore, that his promises toward Israel are being fulfilled in the church. Now, to be clear, that belief in and of itself is not a problem. Don't get me wrong, I don't share the belief. It's not correct theology. But if that was as far as it went, that would not be a problem. The problem is that far too often, innocent falsehoods lead to much more dangerous falsehoods. It is not true that God is done with the first Israel, the physical Israel. But my friends, that's a discussion for another day. The ironic point is that one can believe or disbelieve Bible prophecy, and it should make no difference as to how they feel about Jews. No difference toward the defending of Israel's right to exist. As a Christian, I believe in the second coming of Christ. I do believe he is returning to Israel, just for the record. Someday, we don't know when, but someday, just for the record, he is going to return to Israel. That's the focus of biblical prophecy. However, and it's an important however, so please pay careful attention. I do not defend Israel because of Bible prophecy. I defend Israel for human rights reasons. I defend Israel because Israel's rebirth in the 20th century has been lied about with some of the worst historical revision ever perpetrated. You may be an atheist. You may not even believe in the Bible, but you need to understand our times are being victimized by historical revision. And this is revision that most people have bought hook, line, and sinker. In a few minutes, I will be correcting and reviewing this historical revision. If you follow my radio shows and debates, you've heard this before, so some won't need to hear it again, but for most, it's a dangerous lie that cannot be exposed often enough. First, let me share an even greater irony regarding the topic of anti-Semitism. Sometimes there can be anti-Semitism and proclaimed falsehoods about Israel, even amongst the Jews themselves. That's right. Jews are often their own worst enemy. I, your humble host, am a Jew. A Jew who accepts Jesus, but a real, honest-to-goodness Jew. Nevertheless, my mother was Jewish, my father was Jewish, and I am revealing a sad but seldom acknowledged truth about my people. They are often their own worst enemies. Did you know that many Jews living in New York City right now are supporting this new communist Islamist terror-supporting jerk who's running for mayor? There's a whole organization, Jews for Zoran, as in Zoran Mamdani, otherwise known as Zoran the Commie. The avid anti-Semite who won't condemn the phrase global intifada, which means kill Jews wherever you find them, because Israel doesn't have a right to exist. Kill Jews all over the world. That's exactly what global intifada means. Let me be clear. If the Jews in New York City vote for this smiley, smooth-talking imbecile, if they vote for this anti-Semitic pig, they will deserve him. Often in my formal debates or informal discussions about Israel, there's a wild card people play. At least they think it's a wild card. They point out to me the Jewish pundits and politicians who criticize Israel and take the side of the Palestinians. Oh, they say this so smugly, unaware that they are only demonstrating their complete, utter ignorance about the Jewish people. You see, Jews have a sad history of assuming that if they placate their enemies will make peace with them. That's why so many Jews stayed in Germany even after Hitler came into power. They believed they would be safe. They went out of their way to talk about what good German citizens they were. Unfortunately, Americans are becoming victims of this same phenomenon. That started after 9/11. Almost a month to the day after 9/11, I was on one of my speaking tours in New York. Some students took me into the city of New York that evening. We were actually on the site of 9/11, about 3 in the morning. Steam shovels were still removing debris. Smoke was still coming out of the ground. It was an experience I'll never forget. And while we were there, there was another couple. I was there with a few students. There was a couple, a middle-aged man and woman. They were here from California, not far from San Diego. So when they heard where I was from, we had a little bit in common. And they said they actually traveled out here to look at this site. But the wife said something I will never forget. She said, "I'm just trying to figure out what we did, which makes them hate us so much." I said, "Well, maybe we did nothing." She responded with a very puzzled expression. You see, today's generation doesn't believe in evil. If something happens, there must have been a reason for it. And all too often, the victim is being blamed instead of the evil. There's a name for this. It's called battered wife syndrome. Having once been a pastor who occasionally counseled such women, battered wives, I am very sympathetic to their plight. Asking a mother to take her children and leave a violent man is far more easily said than done. Still, most sensible people cringe when they hear women blaming themselves for their husband's violent abuses. "Well, he only got mad because I provoked him. It was all my fault." "Oh, my husband acts this way because of his own abusive childhood. I know he really loves me because he apologizes after he hits me. In fact, he apologizes every single time. Sometimes he even buys me flowers." My friends, what's tragic is that many who would challenge such a person to secure a restraining order and stop creating excuses offer a few excuses of their own for terrorists who seek to destroy the United States and other civilizations. Sometimes we even take our cues from moderate so-called Muslims who come on TV and say things like, "We renounce the terrorism, of course, but we do hope America has learned its lesson about always taking Israel's side. If there were a two-state solution in the Middle East, perhaps there would be less terrorism." Yes, of course, that makes perfect sense. And if a picked-on third grader gave a bully half his peanut butter and jelly sandwich, the bully would be so appreciative he'd turn over a new leaf instead of finding the same short, skinny kid in the playground one day and demanding all of his pastrami on rye with mustard. So yeah, you will meet Americans who placate their enemies. You will certainly meet a lot of Jews who placate their enemies. So what? Proves nothing. For the last 2,000 years, anti-Semitism has not only demonstrated man's inhumanity to man, it has also been a puzzle and bewilderment to the entire world. Nothing, and I mean nothing, about anti-Semitism makes sense. Consider the following. The only thing that certain segments of the right and left have in common is a hatred for Jews. I remember a while back reading a conservative blog, in which somebody blamed the problem of America's illegal immigration on the Jews. He also went on a tirade against Zionism. As a Jew who is very outspoken against illegal immigration in America, I find this laughable. And as a Zionist, I remind everybody, a Zionist is merely one who believes Israel has a right to exist. Not a colonizer who stole somebody else's land, a right to exist in their own land that historically has been theirs. How sad that many of the people who support illegal immigration hate Israel as much as this brilliant blogger who was against illegal immigration. Leftist Marxists also hate Israel, along with countless Muslims who hold conservative values and are not Marxists. Now, some people view Judaism as a religion. Others view it as a nationality or a race. It gets equally hated for either designation. Those who object to the religion have been known to call the Jews Christ killers. Throughout the Middle Ages, that was constantly the charge. But this only shows how little they understand Christianity, because the Bible teaches that Jesus himself was Jewish, his apostles were Jewish, the original church was made up of Jews. Oh yes, in time more Gentiles and less Jews were followers, but it started out as a Jewish movement, and Jesus intended to die. He planned to die. His task was not being upset by going to the cross. Going to the cross was the way he atoned for our sin. It was God's will to offer him as a sacrifice for our sins. If not for our sins, he would not have needed to die. And as a result, we are all responsible for his death. I'm responsible for his death, but I don't say that because I'm Jewish. I say that because I'm a human being. Now, historically, there were some people responsible for his death. They're not excused. They were used by God. The Roman soldiers were the ones that actually carried out the execution. But the Jewish puppet court Sanhedrin viewed Jesus as a heretic, turned him over to the Romans. So you could call it a collaborative effort. But from the cross, Jesus said, "Father, forgive them. They know not what they have done." The New Testament, with the exception of Luke, was written by Jews. And one who does not understand this concept of the gospel and the cross, basic and foundational, does not understand Christianity and is not a true follower of Jesus Christ. For this reason, the bigot's disdain for Jews is actually not religious at all, and we're forced to view such hatred as a mystery. On the other hand, those who move away from the religion Judaism and view Jewish people as a race also have a difficult time explaining exactly what it is about this race that they don't like. Usually racists go by appearance. It's a horrible, sad reality, but that's what they go by, appearance. Well, what is it about the appearance of the Jews that people object to? Is it the skin color? Not all Jews have the same color of skin. Some are dark, some are tan, but Jews in Sweden have blonde hair and blue eyes. They don't all have big noses either, and even if they did, many people have big noses. Big-nosed people who are not Jewish are not hated. Okay, well, maybe it's those nasty Jewish traits that account for the bigotry. After all, some say, aren't they a conspiracy of communists trying to take over the world? Actually, just as many suggest that they are a conspiracy of greedy capitalist bankers trying to take over the world. The Nazis back in Germany found it useful to accuse them of both, hoping nobody would notice the contradiction. And then these days, Israel is constantly floated as the reason for anti-Semitism, or they won't call it anti-Semitism. They'll just say, "I'm anti-Israel." But you really can't have one without the other. Dennis Prager put it perfectly. He said, "Israel is the only country in history that people feel has no right to exist. Countries war with each other and sign treaties all the time, but the right of the enemy country to exist is never brought into question." Those were the words of Dennis Prager. Modern Israel has had its share of enemies and anti-Semites for many years, but it went on steroids after October 7th, 2023. Unspeakable atrocities were committed against Israeli citizens by the terrorist organization Hamas. They did this in the name of Islam. I'm not saying there aren't peaceful Muslims. I'm just saying this group did it in the name of Islam. This included children murdered in front of their parents, parents murdered in front of their children, women being raped with video of the rape being posted to their own Facebook pages with their own iPhones, babies' heads cut off, babies thrown into ovens like the days of the Nazi concentration camps, Auschwitz. Some have tried to call these atrocities lies and Jewish propaganda, but guess who authenticates it? Hamas. Hamas itself. Hamas openly admits this, brags about it, revels in it. Far more disturbing are the pro-Palestinian college protesters admitting that these atrocities did happen, but claiming Israel deserved it because they are occupiers. This fellow whom Trump is trying to deport, stifled by the courts, Khalid Kalami, he was interviewed just recently, and he said what happened on October 7th was a cry for help from the Palestinians. It was something they needed to do to get attention. Yeah, when you need attention, you just rape women, murder babies. This is insane, and this guy's being treated like a hero. But of course, the narrative is that Israelis are occupiers of Gaza. Occupiers. Israel left Gaza back in 2005. leaving it completely under the control of the Palestinians. They only took the land in the first place because of a war declared against them by 9 surrounding nations in 1967, forcing them to expand their borders for safety reasons. But they were still kind enough to withdraw for the sake of peace in 2005. Israel always gives land for peace, and then there's never any peace. After they withdrew, they were rewarded with synagogues being burnt down and rockets being fired into Israel right away, from all the way back in 2005 to present day. While it's certainly true that some Palestinian families simply want to live in peace, keep in mind that the Palestinian population voted Hamas into power, knowing full well that Hamas in its charter doesn't recognize Israel's right to exist. They are not interested in a two-state solution, and many consider Israel an occupying country simply for being in the Middle East at all. There's a false narrative going around today that Jews have no ancient claim to any land in the Middle East. Supposedly, an indigenous people called the Palestinians lived there for thousands of years before the 20th century when those nasty Jews came from Europe and conquered them. No thinking person or student of history could take this seriously. Unfortunately, thinking people and students of history are in short supply these days. For thousands of years, Jews lived in the land. Archaeology confirms the many years of Israel's existence. King David's name has been found on basalt. Hebrew writing carvings have been found in ancient synagogues. While the Jews were conquered by the Romans in the first century before Christ, the Romans themselves called the land Judea, named after the tribe of Judah, where we get the word Jew from. You can see that name on coins from that era. But in the second century, the early second century, there was a Jewish revolt crushed by the Roman Emperor Hadrian. At that time, he renamed the land Palestina. That's the Latin word for Philistine, an old enemy of the Jews that you can read about in the Old Testament, a people who had long been extinct. At this time, under Hadrian, many Jews were murdered, carried off into slavery, or scattered around the world. They were renamed Palestine to take their old enemy's name and rub it in their faces. But a remnant remained in that land for 2,000 years, all the way up to the 20th century. Palestine remained a nickname only, for the land. There was no significant Arab population until after the time of Muhammad and the conquering spread of Islam taking possession of the Holy Land. At the turn of the 20th century, the League of Nations in the Balfour Declaration invited Jews to resettle their ancient home from all over the world. In paradoxical fashion, the British, after inviting the Jews to return, and again, some Jews still stayed in the land from ancient times, but a lot of them were now being invited to come back in this diaspora around the world to return from this diaspora. So the Jews are being invited back by the British, but the British then sold 75% of Palestine to the Arabs behind the Jews back, creating a new country called Transjordan. This is an extremely important and seldom taught fact. Please catch this. 75% of what had been offered to the Jews was sold behind their backs to the Arabs instead. Not only were the Arabs offered a separate Palestinian state long ago, but they have been living in one since the early part of the 20th century. It's called Jordan, a country three times the size of what remained for the Jews. The Jews accepted this betrayal only because they had no choice. After all, a sliver of the promise was better than no land at all. But the Arabs didn't want the Jews to have even a sliver, and fresh controversy broke out over what to do with the remaining 25%. To appease the Arabs, the United Nations, it's no longer the League of Nations, it's now the United Nations, the United Nations voted to divvy up the remaining 25% between the Jews and the Arabs. UN Resolution 181 called for the partition of a Jewish and Arab state. The Jews accepted this partition. The Arabs did not. After the partition vote from the United Nations in 1947, Israel declared its independence on May 14, 1948. One day later, five Arab armies invaded Israel from Egypt, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, and Iraq. This war had nothing to do with allowing a two-state solution. Indeed, the Arabs waged war because they were rejecting the two-state solution. Their stated goal was the complete extermination of Israel. Arabs living in the Holy Land were encouraged by Arab countries on the outside to abandon their homes and join the invading army. We're coming through. But the war won't last long. The Jews will be gone and you can return to your home. So get out of the way or join the army. But we're coming through. Well, it didn't turn out that way. Israel won the war. Those who were displaced became refugees, but not all Arabs in the Holy Land left. Many Arabs remained and became Israeli citizens. And as citizens of Israel, they have more rights than any Arab in any Muslim Arab country. You won't hear much about that in the news. Later, a publicity ploy by Yasser Arafat in the 1960s, we're going several decades later now, he began emphasizing the name Palestinian for a people who previously called themselves Arabs, and that's when the narrative about the so-called origin of Palestinian inhabitants began. But the ones who wanted conquest, indeed, the ones who wanted genocide, were the surrounding nations. Let me read some quotes from the 1947 war. From the King of Saudi Arabia, 1947. There are 50 million Arabs. What does it matter if we lose 10 million people to kill all of the Jews? The price is worth it. From the Secretary General of the Arabs League, 1947. This will be a war of extermination and momentous massacre, which will be spoken of like the Mongolian massacres. From the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, 1947. I declare a holy war, my Muslim brothers. Murder the Jews. Murder them all. So much for the lies that there would be peace if we only had a two-state solution. The only solution Israel's enemies are interested in is Hitler's final solution. So much for the lies that Israel is occupying somebody else's land. I do understand sincere ignorance. For those who believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, this mystery finds a partial explanation in what the Bible calls spiritual warfare. You may not believe in the existence of good angels and evil spirits called demons. Other radio shows of mine defend their existence. Not defend them, but defend the belief that they exist, that there are enemies. For now, let's just stipulate that whatever your opinion of the Bible, this is just exactly what the Bible teaches. Demonic beings seek to keep people from the love of God, and these beings especially hate the Jews. They hate the Jews because through the Jews, the Messiah came into the world. That's taught in Revelation. And given the way Satan was known throughout Scripture to twist Scripture, we can also assume they hate the Jews because through the Jews, we received the Bible, both the Old Testament and, as I mentioned earlier, the New Testament was also written by Jews. The ability of demons to foster irrational hatred may be a missing piece of the puzzle here. If you don't wish to accept this idea, so be it. But I hope you will at least agree with me that anti-Semitism is a mystery because it makes absolutely no sense. Unfortunately, its lack of logic does not keep it from spreading. Anti-Semitism is as bad today as it has ever been, and it is growing all over the world, not just the Arab world, but Europe, once again, where it once had a happy home not so long ago, and in America, on our college campuses, and in the Democratic Party, where the so-called moderate, spineless politicians are now kissing up to the likes of Zoran Mamdani. Well, instead of giving in to total despair, I'll close by lightening things up a little bit. Have you heard the one about the Jew and the nitwit? Yeah, a nitwit went into a bar, sat next to a Jew, and said, "You Jews killed Jesus Christ." The Jew shrugged his shoulders and said, "Even if that were true, it happened 2,000 years ago." The nitwit replied, "Oh, well, I just found out about it today." This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
I love the classic rock, celebrating the fact that KCBQ was once an oldies rock station. But now we're here for talk, mostly. 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Good afternoon, Bob. How are you doing today?
Doing fine, Brendan. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. A couple of lighthearted things before I get into the very serious topics I have for today. Number one, happy birthday to Dave Stahl.
Yes.
Radio host that comes on right before you here on KCBQ. It's amazing how 33 could look so young on him. I'm telling you. No, but in all seriousness, happy birthday to Dave. Dave, if you're listening, happy birthday. Have many, many more. And you are such a good man. And thank you so much for everything you have done for us.
It's amazing the amount of radio shows he has and the stamina. And he always does a great job. Always says intelligent things.
It's always, always intriguing and always so engaging. So very good job for Dave. Number two of a fun story to make, AOL has made a huge announcement starting September 30th.
Oh, are they closing down?
No, not AOL itself, but they're going to be shutting down a part of their program that they're famous for, and here it is.
What is that, the chat rooms? Oh.
That's right.
The old dial-in.
The old dial-in.
I didn't know they even had that anymore.
I didn't know either.
When I first got it on a computer, I had an old black and white Mac Plus, and AOL was what I used for social media. I had to go through that every time I went on.
Let me tell you, the struggles you kids don't know about dial-up internet, you had to wait until your parents were off the phone.
Are you serious? I didn't know dial-up for the internet even existed anymore.
I know. No, they seriously made a public statement saying starting September 30th, they will now officially shut down their dial-up.
Do they
internet.
Realize the Tyrannosaurus Rex is retired also?
I'm just surprised they even still had it.
No kidding.
Fun fact, every time that Biden is asked to answer a question, that is the noise that is made inside his head.
That's his brain.
Yes, exactly.
That's the rat in the cage of his brain squeaking the wheels.
All right. Well, let's get into our serious topic. So one of the stories I wanted to talk to you about actually kind of relates to your monologue that you had on earlier. And unfortunately, we do have to talk about that person that we always have to talk about every week, which is Governor Newsom, unfortunately.
He's such a gem.
He's something, all right. I don't know if gem is the word I would use, but nevertheless, he rejected a $1 billion, I guess you could say, settlement from the Trump administration, actually, to help settle a UCLA anti-Semitism claim.
UCLA was going to settle with Trump, and then he intervened?
Exactly, yes.
Now, how can he intervene? Isn't that between UCLA and Trump? What the heck business
I believe
is
he
it
has,
is?
I think he has authority over the University of California.
I'd love to tell you what I think of his authority, but there's FCC regulations.
I remember he was stepping in during that time when USC and UCLA said, oh, we want to join the Big Ten. And he said, how dare you? You're taking away money from the Pac-12 by doing that.
Newsom, just make your podcast and get out of Sacramento.
So let me read the story here. So Trump's administration offered to settle claims of anti-Semitism at the University of California, Los Angeles for $1 billion. The University of California system, which includes UCLA, said recently that the government had frozen $584 million in research funding over Palestinian and anti-Israel protests at the school. The system had said that it was reviewing the settlement offer by Donald Trump's administration. Now, this is a direct quote coming from Newsom himself issuing a statement on Friday saying, "This isn't about protecting Jewish students. It's a billion-dollar political shakedown from the pay-to-play president," he says, and I quote.
See, the translation of this is, if Trump is for it, I'm against it.
Yes.
Even when Trump is defending the Jews, even when Trump is speaking against anti-Semitism, he can't bring himself to be on Trump's side just for that?
Yeah,
it's exactly. Absolutely disgraceful. Yeah. By the way, when we talk about the money that schools are getting from the federal government, you know how much money the federal government owes these schools? Absolutely nothing.
Right.
It's a gift, and a lot of it comes out of our tax dollars. And if they're going to promote anti-Semitism, they don't deserve one penny. They should just be closed down.
Exactly. All of these universities are public universities.
Yeah.
Public. So they're being
Let
funded by
Let them get
by
their grants from somebody else.
Exactly. So UCLA has been threatened to cut federal funds over the student protests against Israel and its military campaign in Gaza. White House was saying specifically that university administrations did not do enough to combat anti-Semitism at these protests. Remember, these were going on during 2024, back in early April-ish, during the summertime of that time. Specifically here, it says here that they already attacked the government probed two private Ivy League schools. Columbia University, which agreed to pay a $200 million settlement, and Brown University, which agreed to pay a $50 million settlement.
And then Harvard is still huffing and puffing,
right? Right. They're still in talks, apparently. Yeah. I thought Harvard said, no, we're not going to deal with
them. I thought they said no, and then I think they're kind of back at the table now.
Okay, that's what it is. Okay, understood now. So specifically on UCLA, as you could tell, this settlement is much, much bigger of money than the $50 million or the $200 million. Newsom said about this whole situation, about how much money it was. It's aggressive and concrete steps to crack down on the vile scourge of anti-Semitism on campus, and that the fine would hobble the UC system. Trump has weaponized the Department of Justice to punish California, crush free thinking, and kneecap the greatest public university system in the world. California will not bow down to this kind of disgusting political extortion.
If we're not going to protect people from racism and harassment, what possible reason do we have for a Justice Department even existing at all?
Right, exactly. And besides, you have that limitation of freedom of speech, which is hate speech. At this point, you are passing that level when you're protesting the situation. Anti-Semitism goes right into hate speech. You don't have the freedom to do that.
Now, here's the sad thing, Brendan. A lot of liberal Jews in California, and as I said in my monologue, I'm Jewish myself, but just as they're supporting this guy in New York City, I think a lot of Jews in California will continue to support Newsom anyway. They're their own worst enemy.
It's true. One of the things I do want to mention, too, is that there's the American Jewish groups that you were talking about, the liberal ones specifically, says that Trump is threatening their freedom of speech and academic freedom as well, but
freedom of speech. Jews aren't allowed to go to the library. They're not allowed to go to class. Some of them are being beaten up, harassed. There are even talks on some of these campuses, and this has been going on for years, even before the October 7th, where there were people going out to campuses screaming, "Go back to the oven, Jews." This is not about freedom of speech. If somebody wants to get up and have an academic discussion and take a different position in the Middle East, that's fine. But of course, good luck to anybody from the right or anybody representing Israel coming out and having that same freedom on the campus.
It's true.
So if we really want to talk about freedom of speech, let's talk about the speech that is suppressed, and that real speech always gets suppressed by the left. Violence is called free speech by the left. I'm so sick and tired of this.
Yes, it's ridiculous. And again, I'm shaking my head. Yes, in agreement. I know it's not good for radio, but I'm agreeing with everything you're saying here. To further discuss this point, the situation in UCLA I want to talk about here. Late April, according to Campus Task Force on Anti-Semitism, protesters at a pro-Palestinian anti-Israel encampment were controlling access to parts of the campus, blocking the passage of people who were wearing the Star of David and were suspected of being Zionists. The protesters drew wider attention when the mob of counter-protesters attacked the encampments. Los Angeles mayor, whoop-de-doo, we love her so much, and local Jewish community criticized the university for not immediately summoning police to break up the melee. In the process, a lot of people were injured and a lot of things were destroyed on the campus itself, too. In August of 2024, a group of Jewish students sued UCLA for failing to ensure equal access to campus. arrests during the encampment secured a ruling in their favor by a federal judge. The task force's 93-page report that fall said that the Jews on campus were assaulted and threatened with hateful expressions, including a swastika drawn on a classroom chalkboard and a protest sign that said, "Israelis are native to hell," proliferated amid the encampment. UCLA had agreed to pay $6 million to a settlement lawsuit by some students and a professor who alleged anti-Semitism. They were also sued this year specifically for another mob attack.
See, and the sign of the swastika goes back to Hitler. It goes back to pre-Israel. I mean, there was stuff going on in the Middle East, but pre-Nation of Israel in modern times. What you're always hearing is, "Oh, I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm just anti-Israel." Well, the Jews that live in America are not Israeli citizens. They're American citizens. And as we've already mentioned several times, a lot of Jews in America don't even take Israel's side. They're still harassed for being Jewish. It is anti-Semitism. We need to just call this what it is.
It's true. And again, all we need to do is continuously tell them, look on that social media channels. How can you support this? How can you support all the raping, all the babies?
And Hamas brags about it. Hamas is not even denying. Even the Nazis tried to cover up and deny what they did in their concentration camps.
Yeah, exactly.
Hamas revels in this and brags about it.
And it's shocking to see that people are still in support of this situation. It's ridiculous. At some point, we really, really need to open our eyes, really need to look into this and say, you know what? Enough's enough. We can't be dealing with this anymore. But unfortunately, we still have people that are going to be brainwashed in this
country. Yeah, and the guy spearheading all this at Columbia, Trump tries to deport him. A judge interferes. That guy went on the news this week. And as I mentioned earlier, he says, well, what happened on October 7th was a cry for help. The Palestinians were trying to get our attention. Well, they got our attention, all right.
Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, President Trump is in the news this time, and we're going to look
Trump is in the news?
I know. But we're going to look on a very international scale. Very serious situation is going to be coming up this Friday, and we're going to further discuss it right after this.
This is Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in 3 serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring. Houses burned down. You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric, license number 480539, WNS Electric.
Bob Siegel's novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge. The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel. Push the Winds Around, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
I'm Dr. David Poole, president of San Diego Christian College. If you've been thinking about getting your pilot's license and a degree in aviation, come fly with us. We have a long history of producing aviation leaders. Whether your focus is on commercial, missionary, or military, we're ready to help you achieve your goals from a Christian worldview. So look us up at sdcc.edu. That's sdcc.edu. San Diego Christian College. Come fly with us.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, and say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Hello, Bob. Okay, so very, very big news coming up this Friday. Trump and Putin are planning to visit each other. And
is it really
going to
happen this time? Putin's been stringing them along for ages.
I know. This time around, now, according to...
I have no love for the other guy either. Zelensky, I guess
Zelensky is his name. Yeah.
I'm really tired of him, too. I'm tired of this whole thing on all sides.
Well, I think it's actually very important that we do discuss this.
Well, yeah. This was a war that Trump inherited from that idiot Biden.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this. Let's start off with what you just said. Is Putin actually going to show up in the first place?
I think the threat of tariffs may be forcing him to the table.
Yes, but I was going to specifically say Steve Witkoff, I think, said officially, and he is the U.S. special envoy, said officially, yes, Putin will be here to do our meeting. The discussion, again, was mostly about what's the location going to be. A lot of talks were about Moscow. There was some talks somewhere in the Middle East, too. But it sounded like Trump said, how about we just meet in the middle? Let's go to Alaska or something.
I'm just waiting for Putin to go in there and say, well, if they turn everything over, let us completely occupy the country and they promise never to become part of NATO, then yeah, sure, I'm all for peace.
The other thing I was going to say was that they could do this meeting anytime they want because it'll always be daylight up there right now because they're in the summertime. So, I mean,
you know, it is weird when you think about Alaska because we think of Russia the other direction being in Eastern Europe, which it is, but they're very close to Russia in Alaska. In fact, Russia sold us Alaska.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at a map, if you remember the Ice Age, there literally was that bridge in order for people from Russia to get over to Alaska at the time. Anyways, so Trump and Putin are planning to meet in Alaska this Friday. The agreement on the meeting came about after U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff's talks with Putin in Moscow, which Trump hailed as a great progress. Ukraine President Zelensky has been begging and pleading, please let me join this meeting.
I say no. I think he'll just get in the way of it. And Putin will walk out the door. Let him work it out with Trump. And then Trump needs to sit Zelensky down and say, this is what we're going to do.
But do you know how many times Trump and Zelensky, it's been publicized in public of how bad these fights will get?
Well, also, and I should say, as you know, Mike Friedenberg is our expert on Ukraine.
Yes.
He knows way more about this than me. He's researched this far more than me. So take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. But my understanding is that there's actually a law in the Ukraine that they have to go back and take some kind of vote before they could ever agree to any ceasefire, something along those lines.
Yeah, something like that. Now, I think he has done certain executive orders, if I remember right, like Ukrainian executive orders, where he's gone to go do these meetings or peace talks.
Peace talks or before they can give a concession of land. In other words, Zelensky doesn't have the power to say it himself. But I'm really tired of both of these guys.
But
really,
this war has been going on for 3 years, and it's really sad to see all the results, all the destruction.
Well, here's my concern. You know all that false accusation of Trump being a colluder of Putin.
Yes.
I hope Trump doesn't start thinking that he has to become extra tough with Putin to prove the people wrong. And I believe him. Had he been president, this war would not have started. But it's becoming his war. He can keep saying it's Biden's war. It's becoming his war. And he's really putting a lot of pressure on Putin, particularly the pressure we're putting on India, because India buys a lot of the oil from Russia. And we're telling India, you're going to pay us something like 90% tariff, something like that, if you do this. So I think Putin's ready to come to the table. I don't think Zelensky's going to agree. I'm just not sure what the future of this thing's going to be.
Yeah, I hope that there's going to be a lot of progress with this talk. But in my opinion, I don't think very much will come out of it. And again, please, Zelensky, just stay to the side. Worry about your country right now. We'll come back to you at some point, possibly. But honestly,
and wear a different shirt the next time you come to visit the president.
It's always the same green vested. Yeah. So why is Russia agreeing to this meeting? Well, two different reasons. Putin is facing threat of devastating secondary sanctions on buyers of Russian oil. This includes China, India, and Brazil, specifically. And he's blinked under the pressure. Putin seems less invested in courting U.S. presidents by making far-reaching concessions, knowing that policy can shift dramatically with each administration. Obviously, the Biden administration didn't do wonders for him, but Trump's administration is now going to be coming in again. And this time, I actually disagree. I think Trump's going to be much stricter on him. Basically, he's a really good negotiator. In terms of negotiating, it's his way or the highway, basically. Trump's like, okay, if you don't want to go this, then tariffs are going to be even worse for you. Maybe some other consequences will come about, that sort of stuff.
I think that's the only thing that's going to work.
Yeah, exactly. Now, why is America agreeing to this kind of meeting? Well, part of it's obviously being the number one nation in the world. We want to keep that and want to make sure that power doesn't go to Russia. by any chance with Russia wanting more land, obviously, from Ukraine, and again, gaining more Russian oil resources over there too. So that's part of the reason. The other thing I wanted to point out is that both nations have rejected the proposed 100% tariffs, which specifically are India and China, and they're going to the Russian oil purchases as infringements on their sovereign trade rights specifically. China could retaliate like they did earlier this year by restricting exports of rare earth metals that are vital to U.S. industry and defense sectors. Interesting thing too is that India's Prime Minister Modi is planning to visit with China. This is the first time in 7 years they have actually visited with each other, because over the past 20 years, India and China have been actually fighting with each other. Not in terms of a war, but just governmental fighting in generality, just not getting along. So this is going to be quite interesting to see how he handles
it. I think China's wild card right now is these infected mosquitoes that they're just waiting to unleash on us. I think it's going to be COVID all over again.
Possibly. So the things that are going to be talked about. Putin has hinted that he will be visiting the United Arab Emirates President Mohammed bin Zayed on Wednesday, specifically before he visits with Trump. So obviously we want to know what kind of information is coming from that situation. Number two on the agenda, obviously, is dealing with the border issue between Ukraine and Russia. We want global stability, nuclear arms control, and the situation with the Middle East-Iran trade and sanctions. Those will be lightly discussed, obviously. Also, Moscow calculates that the West has a few remaining tools that are meaningful to change. Both Beijing and Delhi for India and China appear to be moving towards Russia's perspective on the tariff situation, including Brazil's President Lula has proposed that BRICS nations discuss a common position against the U.S. tariff measures. The elephant in the room, obviously, if you haven't heard, the European Union, that whole situation, they're all supportive of the Ukrainians over there. But of course, what are they going to really do much in this situation? I mean,
well, and one piece of good news, I know we've been arming Ukraine again, but this time we're not giving them the arms, they're buying them, and he's getting other people from NATO to pay for them. Right. That to me has been a positive development.
Yeah. Now, you discussed this earlier, to secure Putin's cooperation, rather than in mere stalling tactics, Trump is probably going to have to discuss the key war demands, the formal recognition of territorial gains, the guarantees of Ukrainian neutrality, which is excluding NATO's membership, and the reduction of Ukraine's military to levels.
Well, Zelensky's going to have to give something. With countries want to make a truce, somebody's got to give something. Otherwise, we're going to just see casualties on both sides continue for years.
It's true. Russia insists on maintaining control over four Donbas oblasts plus Crimea with formal recognition of their annexation. The U.S. has previously only conceded on Crimea, leaving Donbass's status unresolved. Rubio, the Secretary of State, has notably avoided specifying what territorial compromises will be considered for this conversation on Friday, which I'm not surprised, because you never know. Russia could mean one
thing. Maybe Trump will offer Gaza to the Russians.
Maybe. The other thing to actually note is there could be some negotiation talks, as we were talking about. One potential compromise involves a land swap, Russia withdrawing from currently occupied territories in exchange for formal control over the remaining unoccupied portions of the four oblasts. In return, Moscow would need to abandon the selective approach and implement a comprehensive immediate ceasefire. Obviously, these talks could mean a lot here, because we could have a renewed battlefield escalation, heightened Russia-West tensions, and of course, millions of Ukrainians' lives on the matter too. 70% of Ukrainians are in favor of an immediate negotiation to end this war and a ceasefire immediately too. So Ukrainians want to see fire. They want this whole thing to end, but it really does come down to possibly this Friday how well the meeting will go. Because if bad and Putin's not in a good mood and everything, we could see a really bad escalation for Ukraine and thus hurting their territories and their people more. But it all depends.
Global decisions in the making based on what side of the bed Putin gets out of that day.
It's true, especially coming from United Arab Emirates. He's going to be pretty tired from that travel from UAE all the way to Alaska.
You wonder what they're going to be talking about there.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, because again, it's got to be oil related, I'm assuming. That's my biggest assumption.
I think he's trying to get himself a wild card to bring into the...
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And again, they have a decent relationship, Trump and UAE. Not as good as some other Middle Eastern countries, but they have a pretty decent relationship, in my opinion. There's no big tariffs, as far as I know of, on that country. And they seem to be okay with each other.
They can be pretty duplicitous, some of those countries, though. They loved Trump when he was there, but a lot of them are still chanting death to the United States, funding Hamas, so they can't really be trusted.
No, of course not. So again, a lot of things will come about. We'll report on it, obviously, when next week comes about. And speaking of next week, Bob, that's the end of our show already. I mean, come on. These
oh, my tips. Goodness. But next week, we have the man himself, Jim Barrier, in the studio to do your stump.
You can absolutely look
Jim
forward
Barrier.
To a stump Jim. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You can look forward to that. All right. Thank you guys so much. Have a great night. Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone.